chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Maggie Wilderotter on the show today. Maggie is the chairman and chief executive officer of Wilderotter Vineyards. Well, Maggie Wilderotter, I am so delighted to have you on the Something Extra podcast today. We finally made it happen. We've been trying to make this happen for several months.
I know, and I apologize, but I think what happened is we were doing so many things remotely that when the COVID subsided, now people are back in person, but the remote stuff hasn't stopped. So calendar-wise, it's been crazy, I think, for just about everybody.
It has been, and we're going to dig into this, but I told you in a sidebar conversation, I know a lot of people. Well, I don't think I know one woman that's busier than you, Maggie. So maybe we'll talk about your secret sauce. I don't know if you even know what your secret sauce is, but I cannot wait for our listeners to get to know you. So you and I met last year for the first time through the Garden City Equity Summit in Deer Valley. And you and I have talked about that. Listeners, if you've not been to Deer Valley, put it on your bucket list. It is the most gorgeous place. But Michael Arrieta is the CEO for Garden City, and he's the one that connected us, and you and I spoke on a panel together, and it was just such a delight, Maggie, to get to spend that time with you. So I did what all good podcast hosts do, and I said, Maggie, come on the podcast because I want to spend more time with you.
Oh, it was a great event, and Michael puts on events where it's from the heart and soul. It's not just about discussing business topics, et cetera. It's about people. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Yes, and I do too. So listeners, we're not going to talk about that too much, but if you want to learn more about Garden City Equity, reach out to myself or Maggie or Michael. We can get you connected. But you know, Michael, truly, Maggie, he says that you are one of the greatest mentors he's ever had, which is really incredible thing. So, yeah, I think you guys got to know each other when you were at DocuSign. You were the interim CEO. And I think Michael was like chief of staff, or, you know, he had a good role, but he was young. You said he was just a young guy. For us, he's still very young, but I think that's where you guys got to know each other.
Yes. You know, I have been on the DocuSign board for a number of years, and, you know, we had a situation where I needed to go in as an interim CEO for a couple months, but I knew Mike even before that. You know, he was a young person on the rise at the company. I try to take an interest in high potential talent, and he represented that. And he also was entrepreneurial in terms of how he thought about business. And I knew it was going to be a matter of time before he decided to do something on his own. So, and I love that. I think knowing when to pivot and what to pivot to. And we have more formal programs these days where people label people mentors or mentees. I know when I was growing up in business, there was no such thing. I had a ton of mentors, but none of them knew that's what they were.
Right. Yeah. Me too.
And
me
I think keeping that attitude of doing for others, others do for you, and making sure we're giving and getting, not just getting.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. It's a give and take, isn't it, Maggie? It truly is. And I feel, and I know you would say the same thing. I've had so many people pour into me in my career over the years. And I just want to make sure that I am pulling other people along, you know. So, well, let's get into a few things. So, you know, you have been a multi-time CEO of both Fortune 500 companies as well as many startups. In your career, I think you've served over 35 public company boards, Maggie, and 14 private boards, ones that our listeners would all be familiar with: DocuSign, Costco, Hewlett Packard, Lyft, Xerox, Yahoo. I could Procter & Gamble. I could go on and on and on. You've also been named as one of the most 50 most powerful women in business for at least 3 years by Forbes. And I know you don't, you probably don't like people like talking about that, but I just want our listeners to understand who we're talking to. I mean, this is a woman that knows a lot about a lot, so cannot wait to dig in. I know we're only going to scratch the surface, but before we get into that, Maggie, I would love for you to take us back to growing up, because you've got some really interesting things about growing up too that I really want our listeners to hear about.
Yes, and I think it's an example of how our parents can have huge influence on who we are and what we do. I grew up in a household, my older sister, Denise Morrison, who actually was the CEO of Campbell Soup. She and I are the only two siblings, male or female, ever in the Fortune 500. And we overlapped as CEOs for a number of years and really helped each other. But we grew up together. My dad was an executive at AT&T, and he only had girls to work with. He didn't have sons. And he really taught us a lot about business, and he took the mystery out of business. He also incorporated business practices into how we were raised. A good example is pay for performance. You know, we had job jars that every Saturday my dad would put our jobs, usually five or six of them, into our jars. And we had to complete those jobs by the following weekend in order to get our allowance. But Denise and I could actually negotiate and trade jobs. So we learned how to negotiate. We learned how to trade. You know, there might be a week that I was really busy, and so she'd do all my chores, and then the next week I would do hers. But then there was a bonus to that. I'd have to do one the following week. So we would put these things together where we learned how to perform, and based on that performance, you get paid. My father also worked for AT&T in the Bell system, and he was in New York Tel, he was in New Jersey Bell, he went to Ohio Bell, back to AT&T. Cincinnati Bell. And during that career formation for him, every year he would take Denise and I to work with him so we could shadow him, sit in on his meetings, and learn about business from an activity perspective. And when we would go with him, we would take the train to work with him. And he would tell us about what the day's going to be. And then on the way home, we would debrief on the day. And we talk about what we learned, and we would ask questions about what we heard. And so our dad really took a lot of the mystery out of business, I think, for both my older sister and I, which paved the way for us to take risks in our career, because we weren't afraid to do that. We were encouraged to do that.
So, Maggie, I absolutely love that. That is brilliant that your dad did that. And I don't know, you may know her, but Cheryl Batchelder is a really dear friend of mine. Do you know Cheryl by chance?
I don't. I know of Cheryl, but I don't know her personally. Yeah.
Oh, she was the CEO for Popeyes and the interim CEO for Pier One. But that's what she said. She said her dad, she said every night at the dinner table was a mini MBA.
Yep. Same thing. Same thing. And I believe that, you know, I've done that with my boys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we can carry on those traditions and it does make a big difference. But I can't discount the fact that my mom had huge influence on my sisters and I as well. She was a working mom. She was a real estate agent in the state of New Jersey. She was in the top 10 real estate agents for many years. So she had this great balance of raising a family, but also having a job. So mm-hmm. Our parents were great models for Denise and I that, you know, you can juggle. But what's important is no matter what you're doing, be in the moment when you're doing it. Don't be thinking about those other 10 things that you have to do or will be doing. Be in the moment with people. It's the biggest gift we give.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Well, you've already answered a bunch of my questions because I wanted to know really who inspired you and truly that is your parents. And I did not know that I was going to ask you that question. Is there another sibling group that were in the Fortune 500? And you said no. I mean, you guys are the only sibling group that's really amazing. Well, you went on to get an education in economics. How do you believe, Maggie, that education has really informed your decision making, your problem solving in your career? Has that played a part?
Yes. You know, I went to the College of the Holy Cross, and this won't surprise you. I was the second class of women. So again, trailblazing into an all-male institution. The first class of women had 12 women in it out of, you know, 450. My class had about 125. So again, still lower ratios, but mm-hmm. it was a great education. I think the Jesuit education system is terrific. It teaches you not just about learning, but it teaches you how to be a lifelong learner. And, you know, I got a degree in economics and business administration from Holy Cross. And it really gave me a great foundation to, you know, have my career be business oriented. That's what I really wanted. But I was given an education that gave me that foundation. And there's nothing like the Jesuits to push you. So,
right. Well, I love what you just said too about loving to learn, learning to love to learn. Because do you ever stop learning, Maggie?
No. Every day is a learning experience.
Every day is a learning experience. I could not agree more. Well, I mean, you had so many great organizations that you've been a part of. You know, you've been the CEO for Frontier. You were there for 11 years, the interim CEO for DocuSign, which we have already talked about. Now, when you were at Frontier, the organization grew significantly.
Yes.
I read about this, Maggie, under your leadership. I think the organization went from $3 billion to over $10 billion during your tenure as CEO. You know, what were a few of the strategies that you employed to really guide the company to this kind of growth?
Yeah, I took it to about $12 billion in revenue before I left. Frontier was a sleepy rural telephone company. And coming from a telephone company family,
yes,
that was about the only thing I had in common with Frontier at the time. But what I loved about it is it served rural and suburban America. And I believe in America, we never leave anybody behind. And while the big cities were all getting data analytic capability through, you know, being able to get online and having networks that enabled them to have both voice, video, and data, I believed that rural America needed exactly the same thing. So I took this rural sleepy telephone company and I did, you know, billions of dollars in acquisitions to buy other adjacent rural properties and put together a leadership team that had great experience in telecommunication services. And so we built out networks in all of these states to provide those capabilities to families that lived in those areas. And it made a huge difference to be able to not just employ people in all of those locations, but to also provide the action, you know, the active capability for them to have access to information that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I also participated, you know, as a CEO, doing fireside chats in those cities, helping with the education of the next generation in those cities. So it was a very active role that I tried to play, and having our teams not just do well, but do good.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, it worked. It definitely worked because the company was better off when you left it. So now you were also part of President Obama's National Security Telecommunication Advisory Committee. That's a mouthful, isn't it? How did this, you know, how did this experience really contribute to your understanding of the cybersecurity issues that we face? And then my second part to that question is, how would you advise companies to navigate this really complex issue that we deal with cybersecurity?
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, because I'm basically a libertarian. And I remember when Barack Obama took office, I was on the boards of the Business Roundtable and the Business Council. So I was very active in what was happening in Washington that can affect business, and how can business and government work together. And so I met Barack Obama at a Business Roundtable meeting in Washington, D.C. And he's, you know, he was young, you know, he was running for president. And, you know, I got to know him. And I, you know, I believe you get to know people for who they are, not what they do.
Absolutely.
And by getting to know him from that perspective, when he did get elected, he really wanted me to help him with the National Telecommunications, you know, and Security Advisory Committee, and to give him advice and counsel on things that he should be thinking about with regard to the business community. And I put together programs where we would bring together the top, you know, 250 leaders of Fortune 500 companies, where he would have a day to interact with them. And we would do breakout sessions and bring advice and counsel to him that was collective from the business community. And so that's how I participated in NSTAC with him. And I have a certificate from Barack Obama that hangs proudly over my desk.
That's awesome.
for a proclamation from the president. So those were, those were a big deal. But I believe being a servant leader and continuing to learn and pivot and help when I can. And, you know, cyber was just in its, it was incubation.
Infancy, right? Yes.
And, you know, today, you know, the bad guys just keep getting better, and companies have to outsmart the bad guys. And we have the capabilities in order to do that.
We hear all the time from CISOs, it's not if you are attacked, it's when.
Yep. And how fast you can find it.
How fast, yes. And how fast you can respond, right?
Yeah.
I love what you just said, though, about pulling these 250 Fortune 500 CEOs together. My goodness, Maggie, I hope the presidents after Barack actually have continued that, because I think that's brilliant, right? I mean, you're hearing from the shop floor, basically, what are the issues and what are the things that we need to be thinking about, because business is so crucial to, you know, our economic stability, right, of our country.
And those organizations are still in place, they are still thriving, and they still have the same activity in terms of, you know, new leaders as they come up. So it's really a long lasting set of programs, which I think is great for the country.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, let's talk about this a little bit, because I know that you've been a huge champion. You're a huge champion, Maggie, for DEI and especially women. At each of the organizations that you are a part of, how did you foster diversity and what strategies did you put into place?
Yeah, I believe God gave me two arms, one to push myself forward, one to yank another woman right behind me. So diversity, equity, and inclusion helps companies make better decisions because you have different perspectives. And I think that when you're monofocused on just one way of doing things, you miss the bigger picture of what can be done and should be done. So I've always been big on making sure that we prepare women and minorities for especially board service. I started doing about 3 years ago board boot camps. And they are very quick, so they don't take a lot of time. You know, we start usually at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we go through about 2 o'clock the next day. And during that period of time, I teach the work of the board, both public and private. I teach how to intentionally get on a board. And then I teach how to be successful in that first year on any corporate board that you join. I also have one of the members that attend do homework. And they will also intentionally send me a list of usually 5 to 6 companies that they would really, they believe they have a right to win to serve on those boards. And I'll look at who the directors are and do some intros for them. Because I'm still very connected in corporate America. I know all the CEOs of the Fortune 500 and actually a number of them from 500 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. So I've placed over 850 women and minority men onto their first boards in the last 2.5 to 3 years. And I make them give back. So when I do another boot camp, they have to come and tell their story. Mm-hmm. And I also have them, you know, now that they're on boards, also, you know, be folks that I'll reach out to if I have women or minority men that are interested in joining that specific board to see if there's an opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Maggie, what a legacy. That's incredible. 850 placements.
I've trained 850. I've placed about 70% of them on a board.
Right. That's wonderful. Wow. Well, let's just say we have a high level person that is looking to join a public or a private board. How would they go about getting into your boot camp?
Well, the nice thing is, just a couple months ago, there's a woman named Janice Ellig in New York. She's got the Ellig Group business. Janice and I have been fast friends for a number of years. And because I keep getting overwhelmed with the demand of people that want to do this, you know, I sit on, you know, 7 corporate boards. I'm a senior advisor to 12 companies. I have 6 grandchildren. I'm married. And I don't have infrastructure, right? So Janice has agreed to take over the boot camp. So she now runs the boot camps. And this year, there are 3 of them. We've done one. We did one in April. And we have a couple coming up in the fall. And I will come and teach the boot camps. But Janice and Camille, her assistant, who's amazing, they do all the logistics. So they do the outreach, the signups, you know, all of the details associated with the boot camps. And then I come and I'll do the teaching. And they're in New York.
That's perfect. That is perfect, right? Because really the logistics part of it is a big lift, right, Maggie? So if you don't have to do that piece and you just can come in and share your expertise, that's beautiful. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we're going to take a quick break. So I read something, you and Denise, your sister, a former CEO for Campbell Soup, were at KPMG and you shared the stage together. I think it was called New Jersey's Women's Network to Network event. This was several years ago, but the whole event was geared around women in leadership, risk-taking, career strategies for women. You both really commented on Sheryl Sandberg's lean in. And cited where she said that the pipeline is small because women opt out of the pipeline because of other priorities. And so, Maggie, I'm going to ask you, do you believe that we have moved the needle on getting the flexibilities in the workplace that are needed for women to want to stay in the game and balance the family and the children and the grandchildren and the spouse sometimes?
Well, I think the best thing, you know, I can't necessarily comment on what drives people to do what they do. But what I can do is be a role model to show it can be done. And that's really where I focus and spend my time. I know Sheryl Sandberg wrote a book called Lean In. I'll tell you something. I've been laying on the table for 50 years. So to me, it's not about leaning in. It's about being all in. And yes. And I really think that difference matters. And so I would just suggest to women who are hesitant, if you put yourself out there, you will grow and learn, and you will get experiences in very different ways that just make you do better, be better, and feel better about who you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great note to end on. We've got a lot more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Maggie Wilderotter.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Maggie Wilderotter. So, Maggie, you talk a lot, and we've already kind of talked about this a little bit. People are so important to you, building people, building high-performing teams, but really seeing the people for who they are and pulling them along. You talk a lot about this, but I personally think that this is one of the things that women do pretty well. Because I think that when we see people, a lot of times we see the whole person, you know, and realize that people are not just one dimensional. But, you know, you and Denise both have, you know, got children, you've got six grandchildren, big corporate jobs. You know, what are some of the tactics that you've used really to see the whole person when you've got teams? And obviously, Maggie, you can't do that with 10,000 people, but you know, you can do what you can. And then you build that into other people that hopefully go and do that for others, right?
Yep, absolutely. You know, I'll say a couple things about this. I do look at seeing potential in people, not just seeing them for where they are today. And I like to get to know people to understand what their potential is, and then encourage them to maximize that potential. I'm also Irish, right? So I'm a storyteller. Mm. Because people do remember stories versus statements. And I know when I was a CEO and I traveled all over the place, every Friday when I was the only CEO of a Fortune 500 without a corporate jet, because I took over a company that was in trouble. I had a corporate jet. I had six pilots. I had a chef. I had a corporate doctor. And the first thing I did is I let them all go. And I said to our employees, this is a company that has not made money in many years. We're all in it together. I'm flying commercial just like everybody else. And, you know, I flew around the country commercial. I probably have the most miles of anybody on the planet on American, United, Delta, it doesn't matter, right. Southwest. Right. But what I would do is every Friday, and I would, you know, upgrade and fly first class because I had a lot of points. And I would get a glass of wine, and I was flying home, and I would write an email to all employees about my week. And I remember the first time I did this, I was watching the movie. It was my birthday. So I got a glass of wine, and I decided to watch the movie on the plane, and it was Secretariat.
And it was, oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's about the horse that comes from behind, right?
Love that movie.
With an amazing jockey who just had this bond with this horse that was very unbelievable. But it reminded me of our company, of Frontier, that we were sort of the underdogs. And I did the parallel of Frontier to Secretariat. And our Frontier colors were red. And the horse was called Big Red. So at the end of the email, right at my signature line, I I changed it to in caps to say, go Big Red. And I sent this email out to my entire employee base. And literally within 10 to 15 minutes, everybody in my company changed their signature to go Big Red. Oh. And it was one of those, you know, sort of rallying cries.
It's a rally cry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get everybody to work together collectively to do the impossible that people don't believe we can. And mm-hmm. And then every Friday I would send an email about my week to all of my employees, and I would get thousands of responses. I mean, I had, you know, 12,000 employees, but I answered every single one of them. And I think when you're a responsive CEO and it's not just one-way communication, it's dialogue and it's discussion and it's deliberation and it's questions, what happens is you're approachable. So my employees would tell me really the truth of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't feel like, oh, we can't tell her. I wanted them to tell me. And I was appreciative to them. Mm-hmm. And I would share their stories with the rest of the organization too.
Oh, wow, Maggie. Okay. I really get it now. I really get it. I mean, you know what? You're an inspirational leader. You inspired them to have hope, to see the possibilities, right? And to dream bigger maybe than they would have before. So, wow, that's just that. I love that story so much. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, here's something that Kelly Watson at that KPMG, she was managing partner of KPMG at the time. She said, women may think they should work hard and then hope that someone will tap them on the shoulder and promote them. But that's not the way it works. You have to pick up your head, pay attention to what is going on, get to know people, make your skill set known to others. This is what makes you valuable in the market. So, Maggie, what I'd love to talk to you about, sometimes you do get tapped on the shoulder. Sometimes you do get tapped on the shoulder, right? And you've tapped a lot of people on the shoulder. But I talk to a lot of leaders, Maggie, and oftentimes what they say is, no, I raise my hand. I raise my hand for the project that no one else wanted. So I have a question for you. How do you, because sometimes putting your story out there, letting people know what your skill sets are, can feel a little bit like self-promotion, and it can feel a little icky. So what would you say to people about that? I mean, how can you go about kind of promoting your brand, you know, within the organization without it feeling icky?
So, you know, look, I always believe that the best leaders are inside out and outside in. All right. So you're looking at things holistically. And I also believe that leaders need to build power bases, which is something that a lot of women don't want to do, or they're afraid to do it, or they think it's like icky to do or something.
Mm-hmm.
But positive power makes the world go round in the right way. Negative power makes it go the wrong way. And I believe in building power through networks. And so to me, networking was always working. It wasn't an extracurricular activity. It was integrated into everything that I did. And, you know, I would raise my hand for projects, for opportunities when I was young. And I always made a list every year of 15 people in business that I wanted to meet and spend some time with. And I would build into my schedule, you know, find out where they were, what things that they loved to do. And I would work my way into an opportunity to meet them, either through people that they knew and I knew, right? Or being at a place at the same time they were, whether it's an event or whatever. Because networking is working. And I also believe that the best way to get to know people is to share a meal with them. Because when you sit down and you eat with someone, you're equals at a table. There's not somebody sitting behind a desk and you're sitting in front of it. There's not somebody who's, you know, got their badge on and they're in a position of power over you or greater than you. When you eat a meal, you're two people or four people, depending on who you're having a meal with. And you're all equals. You're all doing the same thing. And people lean back when they eat. Mm-hmm. And you get to know them again for who they are, not what they do. And so I ate my way around corporate America. and it was one, it was a big gift, right? Because mm-hmm. I got to eat at many fabulous restaurants all over the world with very interesting people. And my company actually paid for it. So.
Yes. Oh, that is so awesome. Well, I laughingly say, but it's the truth, that book that came out, and I can't remember the author. I want to say it was Keith. You probably will. But that book that came out years ago, Maggie, Never Eat Alone. Do you remember that book? I'm like, after reading that book, that's when I really started gaining weight. So, but it's the truth. I so agree with you. Just sharing a meal with someone, you know, and just getting to know them as a person. And I know for me, magic has happened when I just get to know somebody. And you know, it's not like I'm asking anything from that person. I just want to get to know them. And then you're able to make connections sometimes for that person based on, you know, what their interests are or, you know, more about them. I love what you just said. So here's a quote that I read about you. I told you I found all these amazing quotes and some Maggie-isms too that we'll talk about. But and I'm not really sure who wrote this because I didn't write down who wrote it. I just found this quote. Maggie makes herself available to employees and customers alike, modeling a kind of leadership with an emphasis on communication and ensuring that each individual feels respected as a vital part of the mission. Wow. That's just amazing. Here is another Maggie-ism. I love this. And I think you were talking about one of your mentors, Bob Matthews.
Yes.
Maggie, when you wrote this, he was an amazing mentor for you. Someone's belief in you and your abilities can truly change your life. And I love what you said here. You said Bob practiced opening doors. He practiced opening doors, and we can all practice all of these things that we're talking about, right? I see you doing the same thing, Maggie, for other people. And so you've carried on Bob's legacy that he put inside of you. Here's another one. Never take your customers for granted. They may love your product, but if you don't show them love, they will buy from anyone but you.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, they may love the product, but if you're not care and feeding of them and showing them, and I know we don't use love a lot in business, but I think love is an important word. But here's another one. One more. Learning isn't always easy, nor success a given. I think of an oyster irritated by a grain of sand and how that rub of sand in water makes a pearl. That same process can produce great results in business. Adversity and struggle can make great wins happen. And that is Maggie Wilderotter. So do you have a story? Just let me ask you this before. I want to talk to you about your winery and Jay, because we've got some commonality there that you may not realize on that. But do you have a story, Maggie, about where adversity really was the thing that helped you grow, or maybe even a struggle?
So I'll give you two stories. One about Bob Matthews, who was the founder and CEO of Cable Data, which was a data processing and management information systems company in a very nascent new business called the cable television industry. So this was way back in the 70s. And I was the accounts receivable supervisor, my first job out of college at Cable Data. And about 6 months after that, I was promoted to the manager of accounting. So I ran the accounting department. And I did that for a while. And the company was growing exponentially because the cable industry was starting to take off. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a sales and marketing department. And I started to work on Bob to say, you know, Bob, I think I could start a sales and marketing team and we could, you know, interact with customers and make sure we're selling the right products and services to the right people. And we could do marketing programs to, engage our customers better. And I worked on him for about 6 months. And he finally said, okay, go hire your replacement in accounting. And so I hired my replacement. I was in a two-week training before I was going to start my new job. I was a week into it. And Bob called me in his office and he said, I have some good news and bad news. And I said, okay, I'm from accounting. Let's start with the bad news. And he said, you're not going to run sales and marketing. And I looked at him like he had two heads. I said, Bob, I've already hired my replacement. He's a week into training. What do you mean I'm not going to do that? He said, I've decided since we're growing so fast and we did data processing, I want to get closer to my customers with the data processing services. So I want to open regions in 5 locations around the country and 1 in Canada. I want you to go scout, find those locations. I want you to hire general managers to run those locations, oversee us distributing our data processing capability out to all those locations, and get the teams in place in order to support customers more locally. And I looked at him like he had two heads. I'm like 27, 28 years old. I said, Bob, I don't know anything about regional operations. He said, yeah, you don't know anything about sales and marketing either.
Oh my goodness.
But it was the best job I ever had to be a CEO, because I basically got to be a chief operating officer running distributed groups. And I had, I opened 6 regions, of which in data processing in those days, the only people in data processing were guys.
Mm-hmm.
I had 6 men that were at least 10 to 15 years older than I was, all worked for me. And they built teams. They were great mentors for me, but I was also a great mentor for them. I taught them different things about how to think about business. I also taught them that having capable women working for them was a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they stepped up to that occasion and they had balanced management teams because of that. And it really opened things up. So that was an example of someone taking a risk on me early in my career. And Bob, you know, Bob Matthews as a CEO, he was an engineer by background. 50% of his direct reports were women. He actually married one of them. So,
oh, wow.
He loved women. He loved all of us. But all I'm saying is he had that secret sauce of knowing women could be really, really strong leaders. And I still keep in touch with several of the women that I work with way back then. The other story that I'll tell you is about tenacity and grit. And I, as I said, I always made this list of different people that I wanted to get to know. And if I felt that I was not making headway or getting traction, I remember I would send flowers to get their attention.
Oh, wow.
And I would send flowers and I would put a little card, you know, roses are red, violets are blue. All I want is 15 minutes with you. And I would do little poems on my flowers, and it worked. I mean, I would, you know, when you send flowers to people in technology that are guys, they call you back. It was amazing. Bye. So being creative, not ever thinking about things as failure, is I've always just not figured out what to do yet. And I think kind of building that tenacity and grit into our leaders today is really important to do, because, you know, stuff happens around us that we don't get to control.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can
that's
control
so good.
Is what we do about it.
Yes. Yes. That's so good, Maggie. Well, you just reminded me, this is so funny, because you do, one of our listeners, if you're trying to get the attention of someone, you know, send flowers or do something, a little different, right, than the normal person would do. I remember years ago, a young woman was trying to get on my calendar, Maggie, and she sent me a inscripted, beautiful Cutco knife. Now, if you've got Cutco knives, these are not inexpensive. I knew she probably spent about $120 on this Cutco knife, because it was a carving knife, you know, for turkey or, you know, a big piece of meat. But she put on there, I would love just a little slice of your time. And I'm like, Whoa. I'm like, of course. I said, if she's going to take the time, you know, put my name on the knife, I've never used the knife because I'm like, oh, I'm not just going to use this day to day. And it just stood out to me. And I'm like, of course, absolutely. I would love to meet with you. And we still meet, you know, from time to time to this day. I said, you know, I'll meet with you whenever you want, but I'm putting the onus on you to remind me for a meeting. So I love that. Well, okay. So Jay is your husband. And I want to talk about this for just a minute. Something you may not know, Maggie, I don't think we've talked about this when we had met last year, but you've known Jay since you were 12. I think you guys met at some beach club or country club, something like that. Greg and I have known each other since we were 4 and 6. We went to the same church together. And so we kind of grew up together, didn't start dating until we were in high school, but I've known him practically my whole life. And so that's really special. I love that you guys have known each other that long. But I know that Jay had always dreamed of being a winemaker. And so I would love for you to tell us a little bit about Wildewater Vineyards. And I'm not sure if you guys still have the Grand Reserve Inn or not, but tell us about winemaking.
Yes. My husband, again, Air Force Academy grad, flew jets in the military, very smart guy, especially, he's very intellectually smart, but he's also very sensitive, right? He's one of these guys that has a good balance to him. And I remember that he's always been a grower since he was a kid. He had big gardens. I remember when we were dating, you know, he was 13, and whenever he would come over to my house, he'd ride his bike, but he'd bring a bag of vegetables from my mom. So my mother always loved my husband more than me. But, you know, that was just sort of the person he was. He, you know, he loved the soil. He loved things that grew. And he has like a sixth sense about that. So at one point he said, you know, I really want to get some land and maybe grow grapes and make wine. And I said, honey, the only thing you know about this is you like to drink the stuff.
Right.
So we were in the Sacramento area at the time when I worked at Cable Data. And so what I said, you need to go figure out what it takes to do this. And, you know, in Sacramento, we're very close to where Napa is. So my husband enrolled in courses at UC Davis, right outside of Sacramento, and enology and viticulture. And I thought, oh, great. So now he'll actually see what it takes to do this and it'll go away.
Right.
But he just got more excited about it. But because he was able to get that education, he knew what he needed to do in order to do it. So we bought 40 acres of property in Amador County, California, which is between Sacramento and Lake Tahoe. At the 2,000-foot level. It's actually the oldest red grape growing region in the United States of America, because when gold was discovered in the Sierra foothills by the miners, the Italians came over from Italy and planted grapes to provide wine to the miners. So on the property we had, that 40 acres, we had 100-year-old vines on that property. So, but Jay, you know, he cultivated, he planted out the entire 40 acres. And, you know, he walks those acreage and he knows exactly what's happening with those grapes. So he was a great grower and he always sold 60% of his grapes. But over time, we built a 5-star luxury inn on the property. We put in a tasting room. We put in a winery. So he started making wine in addition to growing. And we did that for a number of years. We owned that property for about 40 years. And after we owned that property for about 10 years, we bought another 40 acres a mile away that had 25 acres planted. And we built our home on that property. We tore down the house that was there, built our home, and put in a guest house. And a couple of years ago, with, you know, just us getting older, et cetera, we actually sold the business that has had the winery, the tasting room, and the inn, because it was 7 days a week. I mean, I was the rainmaker for the inn, you know, filling the inn. We had 17 employees. It was a 24/7 operation, 7 days a week, in addition to all the other stuff we were doing. So we finally just said, we'll keep the acreage that Jay grows and sells, because he was selling 60% of his grapes anyway. He's got 10-year contracts on all of those grapes. And we have our home and we have a guest house, so we can have small groups come together, but we don't have to be in this business 24/7. So right. it was a great chapter for us. And he's still a grape whisperer, and he still gets to do what he loves to do. And I get to have more time to spend it with my grandchildren. And
Right. And an endless supply of wine.
That's right. That's
Maggie.
Right. We have a lot of wine to last us 100 years. So
that is wonderful. Well, there's part of your legacy too for future generations. Well, Maggie, oh my goodness, I think I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but we won't do that to our listeners. Maybe in the future we'll do a part two. But I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think we need to be in the moment with the people that we care about, both at the office as mm-hmm. well as personally. And make sure you have that balance of being intentional about how you spend your time. Those are the time is our biggest gift. And it's also a gift to ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, this has been so much fun. Wow. I feel like I've learned a lot just from listening to you. And I know that our listeners are going to appreciate all your insights and your experience about your leadership journey and family and the whole nine yards, Maggie. So thank you so much for making the time.
And thanks for making it easy. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.